At the Commonwealth Policy Foundation, we try to approach the issues of life, marriage, religious liberty, and fiscal integrity from a biblical perspective that promotes thoughtfulness and kindness. We work with political leaders and concerned citizens from all across the state. To stay informed, visit commonwealthmatters.org and sign up for our e-newsletter. The Commonwealth Policy Foundation is a nonprofit organization that only exists because of friends like you. Thanks for tuning in to The Commonwealth Matters.
Welcome to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson, Executive Director of the Commonwealth Policy Center. Gambling expansion. Last year saw the largest proliferation of gambling in the Commonwealth of Kentucky with the passage of HHR, historical horse racing. Now, every Kentucky racetrack has some form of casino-style gambling that they call historical horse racing. This last session, four bills addressing the gambling issue were recently proposed. And joining me to unpack these bills and to discuss further some of the problems with one in particular is State Senator Whitney Westerfield. Senator Westerfield, welcome to the Commonwealth Matters.
Thanks for having me on, Richard.
There were a number of bills addressed in the Kentucky House. One of the bills would have created a huge fund, a state board, and a fund to assist problem and compulsive gamblers in the Commonwealth. I believe the number is about $225 million would put into that fund, which is an admission that there are a number of problem gamblers and a lot of money needs to be used to address that. Please respond to that. Isn't that a contradiction where the legislature passed a bill to expand gambling and now they want to create a fund to help problem gamblers?
Yeah, I think that it really speaks to, I think the contradiction is probably the nicest way to put it. I think it speaks to the terrible public policy that gaming is. We're doing our dead level best, we being the General Assembly, to bring an activity that is replete with corruption and corrupting influence that harms families and that we know comes with addiction and financial despair and damage. And we're inviting that into the Commonwealth. At the same time, we would pass legislation in a heartbeat that provides for substance abuse care and treatment. And there isn't a sponsor in the chamber of either the House or the Senate that would introduce a bill to bring a new drug on that would be a fentanyl or carfentanil or heroin. You'd find near unanimous approval to combat those things because they create such harm. There's no one proposing to legalize those things. It's frustrating to see such an effort annually now, such an effort to bring this industry to Kentucky. And I think, and the Senate president said this on Thursday of this week, that I think it's a pretty small potatoes amount of revenue. I mean, any revenue, I guess, is good, but in my opinion, not every revenue source is good when it comes with so many harms, and this one certainly does.
Sure, and of course, you're referring to a bill that would expand sports gambling. It'd create a commission to regulate sports gambling.
That's House Bill 606. That's right, and I hope that one's dead, but the one that I think is a little off the radar and was pitched to legislators like me that everyone knows as opposed to gambling as something we can get behind is House Bill 608. And this is the so-called gray machines bill. There are these slot-like machines that are popping up, and there are hundreds of them, I'm told, or maybe 1,000 of them or so around the Commonwealth in various little tiny venues or dives or beer joints or convenience stores. And they are presenting a competitive option or alternative to the slot machines that Churchill Downs and the other established horse racing folks have successfully lobbied and made legal in Kentucky. They've pushed this bill, House Bill 608, to stop these so-called gray machines. And on the face of it, as an anti-gambling legislator, very opposed to gambling as a regressive tax and a harm on our families in Kentucky, I'd be the first vote to shut these machines down. I wish I could shut all of them down, but that's before you read the bill, and that's where the problem is.
So, Senator Westerfield, it's funny that you have been approached to be made aware of the bill.
I was actually asked to sponsor a Senate version of this bill, and when I got the language, I said, you give this to somebody else, I'm not going to touch this.
I was also approached by a lobbyist who was soliciting our support for the bill as well, had an interesting conversation with that person. But on the face of it, we see this as a way to stop proliferation of what are called gray machines. By the way, let me stop right there for a moment. Do you know why they're called gray machines?
Actually, I don't.
I have not been told either. My guess is that it's because there's a gray area of the law.
That would be my guess as well.
That allows them to operate. I was in on the Licensing and Occupation Committee hearing, and I did listen to testimony for and against this. It's my understanding, if I heard correctly, it's over 1,000, maybe 1,400 of these machines exist across the state right now. They're in 70-some counties, maybe 71 counties, if I understood correctly. And John Tilley, one of your former colleagues, represented Hopkinsville for years in the state house, testified that the law does not outlaw these things. He said if they are illegal, he said, why aren't the state police there to arrest him, which he made a very good point. But there is problematic language in this bill. One of the provisions essentially says that gambling shall not be defined by anything the Kentucky Lottery Corp does, anything the Kentucky Charitable Gaming Commission does, and the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission. So anything that those three official state entities do, whatever they do, it can't be considered gambling.
Here's the insidious part here, Richard. Each one of those three things you just mentioned, the Lottery Corporation is governed by Kentucky Revised Statutes, KRS, Chapter 154A. The Horse Racing Commission is governed by and spelled out by KRS Chapter 230. And charitable gaming is under KRS Chapter 238. We already have whole statutory sections dedicated to those three things. But they've drafted this bill to say this. So when you read House Bill 608, and I encourage folks to do that, look up the GA version of House Bill or the current version of House Bill 608 when you go to the legislature's website for the 2022 regular session. And you see the existing language on page 2 of this short 6-page bill, and it has the existing definition of gambling. Gambling, and this is all in KRS 528.010. So the definition section of the gambling criminal code in Kentucky. It defines gambling as all of these things. And then the new language just before it is what is so troublesome. It goes out of its way to say gambling shall not include 1A, B, C, and D. And A, B, and C are the three things you just mentioned, the lottery, horse racing commission, and charitable gaming. So even though they've got a standalone statutory section where they're governed, we're taking an affirmative vote by declaring in this bill that those things aren't gambling when we both know that they all are gambling. And I have a philosophical problem with putting my stamp of approval with my name and my I vote behind a bill that says the lottery is not gambling and horse race betting is not gambling and historical horse racing is not gambling, all part of the Horse Racing Commission, that charitable gaming is not gambling when I know it is. So that's my first problem. The second problem that I think is even more dangerous, and that's 1D. That's the fourth little bit here, under that change. Gambling shall not include, and I'm reading from the bill, shall not include amendments to the Kentucky Constitution or action of the General Assembly after January 1st of 2022. So we're saying in advance, without seeing the language of a potential constitutional amendment down the road or some future legislative act down the road, we're agreeing today that some future version of the Constitution amendment that we might have or some future bill, because it's both. It's both future legislation, act of the General Assembly, or the constitutional amendment proposal. We're saying today, sight unseen, that it doesn't meet the definition of gambling. And I think that is terribly reckless and wide open expansion of gaming in Kentucky.
Thank you for bringing up that point in particular. Could this possibly mean that any effort to restrict or to ban gambling could be taken out of the hands of the people off of as far as the constitutional amendment route?
I don't believe that it goes that far. I think you'd still have to amend the Constitution, but we're putting our stamp of approval on it in advance without having seen the language. Often, Richard, when we talk about budgets in the General Assembly, and certainly we've talked about a lot of budget this year as it's a budget session, we are often reminded that we can't bind future General Assemblies. We can't force a future General Assembly to do X, Y, or Z about money. That's why our biennial budget lasts 2 years. It's why when you see the road plan, we appropriate money only for the first 2 years, but there's a 6-year road plan. We have the 2 years in the biennium, and then we have 4 out years, they're called. Those are sort of suggestions. They are not appropriated dollars in those out years because we cannot bind a future legislative act. That's what this is doing. We are tying ourselves and binding ourselves to approving some future sight unseen legislative act, whether it's a constitutional amendment proposal or a piece of legislation to change the statutes, and we're declaring it today without reading it, without knowing what it might ever say, that it doesn't constitute gambling. And I think it does take away the people's branch of government from debating that issue when and if it ever comes up down the road.
Senator Westerfield, do you think that many of your colleagues are aware of this, of what we're talking about right now?
I have to assume a lot of them were not. I haven't spoken to the House members about the language. It barely limped out of the House of Representatives, so it was already contentious. But I haven't heard anybody else raise the issue, and I'm sort of surprised it got out of the House the way that it did. So I've tried to raise the issue here. It's Senate Floor Amendment 3. I want to ban these machines like everybody else that doesn't like gambling machines, but I want to do it without taking an affirmative vote declaring these things as not gambling, when in fact, that's exactly what they are, and without tying us to some future unseen constitutional amendment proposal or legislation. I just think that's a reckless way to legislate.
Senator Westerfield, when it comes to redefining terminology, and this is what you could arguably say this is what it's doing, it's saying that whatever these three state entities does is not gambling or is not considered gambling. The legislature's already set a precedent for doing that, though. They redefined 100%. Pari-mutuel. Last year was redefined. That was a long-established, well-known term, and they twisted it. They changed the definition.
Not only did they change the definition, but they gave the Horse Racing Commission sole authority to define it henceforth, however they deem appropriate. It was a dangerous piece of legislation, if for no other reason because it yielded or delegated so much of our legislative authority to some executive branch agency, which to this day is still not subject to the Executive Branch Ethics Commission. One of the changes I've proposed in the sports betting bill, should it come forward, is changing that for good to make sure. I've tried two or three different years. Tried last in either last year or the year before, and it got hijacked by a floor amendment and a change in the House by some agreement, and they changed some things and left out my executive branch ethics language mysteriously. So I will continue to make sure that they are subject to the Executive Branch Ethics Commission.
Good. So for those not in tune with the HHR debate last year, pari-mutuel was something that was part of horse racing, but they expanded the definition to include those who are playing video slot machines, essentially saying that they are engaged in pari-mutuel wagering. That's oversimplified, but for the sake of our conversation and for the sake of our listeners, that's essentially what the legislature did. The other thing, though, is they expanded the definition of games of skill to include things like blackjack, poker, and that's where I think these gray machines come into play.
It is. I mean, you really hit the nail on the head there, Richard. So much of what we do, I mean, words matter, and comma placement matters, and clauses matter, and how you interpret these statutes. You've really got to split hairs and be very careful with what you say. That's how, to use the frog boiling in a pot of water, that's how they turn the temperature up just in slight, tiny degrees. And you make a change here a little bit, and that small half a degree change here at the beginning can result in an enormous wide change, degree of change a few years down the road. It gets the, you can use any metaphor you want, gets the nose under the tent. Whatever it does, it helps make those changes easily, more easily done down the road. That's why you've got to be on guard with these changes all the time.
So, Senator Westerfield, if your amendment is not accepted, it's Senate Floor Amendment 3, to House Bill 608. If that's not accepted, are you going to vote against that bill?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll vote against the bill if Senate Floor Amendment 3 is not adopted. If it is adopted, I can vote for it because it outlaws and prohibits the gray machines from proliferating anymore, and it stops them in their tracks and does so without taking an affirmative position declaring these things that are gambling as not gambling. But if they don't adopt, if the Senate decides not to adopt Senate Floor Amendment 3, and I've gotten some indication that there's a desire to see the bill pass clean, I could be defeated. They could make a change. I filed the floor amendment. It's timely right now. They could put the bill back in committee on the 59th day, make one change with a committee substitute, and then none of my amendments or my Senate Floor Amendment 3 is not germane anymore. So I've got to be on the watch for any sort of chicanery through legitimate procedures. I say chicanery sort of tongue in cheek because that's a procedure that's done all the time, and changes that we need and all agree to make can be done that way. But if they want to pass it clean without my amendment, they might try to do something like that. So I'll have another version of the amendment to the sub ready to file. And if it doesn't, if for some reason, some procedural snafu prevents the floor amendment from being considered or voted on, you better believe I'm going to vote against the bill. And even though it would allow these machines, my vote would be against stopping these machines. It'd also be against this language, which I think is an insidious mission creep from the gaming industry in Kentucky. And I'm going to give a floor speech about it and make sure people know.
Senator Westerfield, thank you for sharing your time with us. Keep up the good work. I hope it goes well in the two-day override session for you.
I appreciate it. Encourage your listeners, reach out to your Senate members and tell them to support Senate Floor Amendment 3 here on House Bill 608.
That sounds good. And I'll give out that legislative message line. It is 800-372-7181. Any of the listeners can call in and let their state senator know to support SFA number 3, Senate Floor Amendment. I'm sorry, I just messed that up. SFA 3 to House Bill 608. Again, the number is 800-372-7181. Call and let your senators know to support SFA 3 to House Bill 608. Senator Westerfield, thank you so much.
Hi, Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Policy Center. It's clear that the news media isn't always fair. In fact, there's lots of far-left bias and political gamesmanship. No surprise there. So if you're looking for perspective that's grounded in the truth of Scripture and our nation's founding principles, then get plugged into CPC's resources. Sign up for our e-newsletter at CommonwealthPolicyCenter.org. You can also follow us on Facebook at Commonwealth Policy Center. And we're on Twitter at CPC4Kentucky.
Welcome to the Commonwealth Matters. Joining me in this segment is State Senator Robbie Mills from Henderson. Robbie had sponsored Senate Bill 83, the Fairness in Women's Sports Act. Robbie, I wanted to bring you on to give you a chance to respond to the governor's veto of the bill. He says that it wasn't necessary. In fact, he, in his veto message, looked at the KHSAA policy regarding transgender sports, which is somewhat convoluted, lengthy, not very clear, in my opinion. But he says, look, there's already a policy that's there. How do you respond to that?
Well, thanks, Richard, for having me. First of all, there's two parts of this bill. The bill relates to high school athletics, but also post-secondary athletics as well. But on the high school athletics, I just really thought that the Kentucky High School Athletic Association's statement was just really confusing. And ultimately, it left the determination down to an athletic director or a principal or someone from their school to determine what sex the athlete was. And on top of things, we've got statistics upon statistics that show that even though you've taken suppressing drugs, that a male athlete is still going to have an advantage over a female athlete in grip, in strength, in reach, in height. All those things are just unfair for young ladies and women to be competing with.
Yeah. The Kentucky Fairness Campaign and the ACLU both issued statements saying that the Fairness in Women's Sports Act is not necessary, that it violates Title IX, and will jeopardize students' mental health. Now, that covers a lot of ground there, but what's your response to that?
My response on the Title IX is, women's sports came about and the proliferation of women's sports came about because of Title IX. I actually think that this is challenging and possibly putting women's sports at jeopardy. So it's just 180 degrees opposite of what the fairness ordinance would say. And of course, we've heard this all along. One of the Democrats' favorite things to do is to cry foul if you have no examples of something. As legislators, we're looking forward into possible issues, ways to protect the public. And this is a forward-thinking bill. We know of many, many transgender children that are in middle school. Our schools are promoting it. And it only seems right that as these kids age, we're going to end up with transgender athletes and we're going to have to deal with this. So why not have something specific on the books that tells high school principal or athletic director, look, whatever is on the birth certificate is the sex of the child, and that's where they play sports.
Robbie, so just to be clear, you sponsored this bill. You were the driving force behind this bill. that both houses, that were both bodies, the House and the Senate, passed by overwhelming margins. But just to be clear, we're behind this not because you are against any group or transgender people, but it's because you really believe that women's sports in Kentucky were in jeopardy.
Absolutely. I think this is a threat to all those young, you know, travel sports are extremely popular right now. Kids are putting hours and hours into honing their skills. And I would just hate to see a young lady have opportunity taken away from them by an unfair athlete that's competing against them or a male athlete that's competing against them. No knock on transgender or homosexuals. It's just a fairness issue, to be quite honest.
Sure. The legislature is going to convene for the two-day override session. Do you believe that Governor Beshear's veto will be overridden on this bill?
I do. I believe that we have sufficient amount of votes in both the House and the Senate to override this. We'll have some interesting debate, but ultimately, I think we will override the veto.
Very good. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, Richard, I just appreciate all CPC does to bring issues like this to the forefront and to report on them. So thank you so much.
Right. You're welcome. And thank you, Robbie.
Hi, Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Policy Center. It's clear that the news media isn't always fair. In fact, there's lots of far-left bias and political gamesmanship. No surprise there. So if you're looking for a perspective that's grounded in the truth of Scripture and our nation's founding principles, then get plugged into CPC's resources. Sign up for our e-newsletter at commonwealthpolicycenter.org. You can also follow us on Facebook at Commonwealth Policy Center. And we're on Twitter at CPC4Kentucky.
Welcome back to the Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with State Representative Nancy Tate. And Representative Tate sponsored House Bill 3, the Healthcare in Humanity Act, which was also vetoed by Governor Andy Beshear. Representative Tate, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I appreciate this, Richard.
Yeah, I thought it'd be good to have you on the program to hear your response to the governor's veto of House Bill 3. Of course, you have been a champion of the pro-life cause ever since you were elected. And this was a pro-life bill that covered several aspects, dealt with closing some loopholes regarding minors getting an abortion. It also addressed fetal remain disposal, let abortion centers, restricted abortifacient pills through the mail, and then also required abortionists to have admitting privileges at local hospitals. Governor Beshear vetoed this, and this is what he said in part. He objected to the legality. He said the Supreme Court has ruled that such requirements are unconstitutional, and it makes it impossible for women, including a child who's a victim of rape or incest, to obtain a procedure in certain areas of the state. And when you talk about exceptions to abortion restrictions, rape and incest are probably the most emotionally volatile. Can you address that, the rape and incest exception?
Yeah, Richard, I think that's a very interesting argument that the governor puts out, as well as, you know, all the other people that are in opposition to this bill. This was one of the most prominent, I guess, most the debatable piece of this bill. The thing that's really interesting is that right now, abortions can be performed in the Commonwealth of Kentucky up to 20 weeks of gestation. And so the interesting piece is that there's nothing at all in the current law that prevents a woman that's been raped or the baby that has been conceived from incest or rape from having an abortion. So there's nothing at all that prevents a woman up to 20 weeks of gestation from having an abortion. So they have 20 weeks to make that decision. After that, as we know, then the risk continues to increase for the mother if they were to make that decision to have that abortion after the 20 weeks. Yeah. So there's nothing that prevents a woman from having that. And I don't know that there's any point in actually going back and making a specific provision for rape or incest. So I don't see the point of the argument.
Yeah, no, thank you for addressing that. I think that's often a red herring. They'll say, well, there's no rape or incest exceptions. And in reality, it's really not necessary. One important provision I forgot to mention, and you were alluding to this, there is an abortion ban Actually, after 15 weeks, the Senate included Max Wise's bill that would ban abortions after 15 weeks. It follows Mississippi's law, which it's being considered by the U.S. Supreme Court right now. And court watchers believe that it has a very good chance of being upheld. And Kentucky, if this veto is overridden, will have a 15-week abortion ban on the books.
One of the things that, if anybody listened to that Supreme Court argument, it was very interesting to me because the whole point of Roe versus Wade in 1973 was the topic was when does life begin and when is viability? So what the Attorney General Fitz from Mississippi is asking for is that the Supreme Court readdress the viability of the infant in the womb. And with that, potentially Roe versus Wade could be overturned. And so we're expecting that ruling. That ruling has to be made before June 30th of this year. And if the Supreme Court does do exactly like Attorney General Fitch is asking for, then that basically we're asking for a Roe versus Wade to be overturned, which would return the decisions about the abortions back to the states, which is really, truly what we're asking for.
Yeah. And thanks for bringing that up, because with that being the case, and that seems to be the direction the court is moving in, then Governor Beshear's and other pro-abortion politicians' argument of it's unconstitutional simply goes out the window, doesn't it?
That simply goes away. Yes, sir. That's exactly right. And then, of course, then it falls right back to hopefully House Bill 91, which was passed during the 2020 session, which will be on the ballot in November, that would state that in the event that Roe versus Wade is overturned, then this would be a constitutional amendment that Kentucky does not support abortions at all. And so that constitutional amendment is extremely important for us, which is the Yes for Life campaign that you're very familiar with. Yes, sir.
Absolutely. And of course, you're referring to the amendment that will be on the ballot this November. And it says that abortion is not a protected right under the Kentucky Constitution, nor shall public tax dollars be used for abortion in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. What do you see happening in the legislature? Again, Governor Beshear has vetoed House Bill 3, the Health Care and Humanity Act. Do you see the legislature overriding that veto?
I'm very confident that the legislative body will override that veto, which I'm very anxious to see that.
We all are. Well, thank you again, Representative Tate, for joining us. Keep up the good work, and may God bless you.